And one of your aerial was like, did you know that 95% of the people in India still think laundry is a woman's job? And Ariel was just like, gosh, that doesn't seem like it's, this was 2017 or 18 at the time. They're like, that doesn't seem right. Like it's, haven't we all moved past that? Like, so they created a campaign they called Share the Load. And what they did is they went out there and they advocated hashtag Share the Load with, for everybody in the family to help with the laundry. It shouldn't just be mom's job anymore. And of course, this kind of air cover for someone who is burdened with this task would elicit a huge thank you, because that's, you're just helping to make their lives better. And you haven't done a darn thing. It's not about the product.
It's positioning.
Yeah. It's like, here's what we know you care about. And so we're going to prove that we care about you because we care about that. Sales went up 76%.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the first part of my conversation with Reed Holmes. My next guest spent over three decades leading creative departments at some of the best ad agencies in America. His idea for H&R Block, You Got People, garnered 4 million new clients. His work has changed the trajectory of brands like Burger King, the Mayo Clinic, KeyBank, and many others. He also has multiple public speaking awards and helps to give audiences a molecular understanding about how clarity creates impact. He's won almost every award in advertising and has been featured in the New York Times, Adweek, Advertising Age, Forbes, and Communication Arts. But as his kids started graduating, he realized he wanted to leave a legacy. So he found an approach that inspires businesses, its marketing teams, and those they wish to attract. His number one best-selling book, Appreciated Branding, Transform Your Brand from Ignored to Irreplaceable, has become a go-to mature brand playbook. His name is Reed Holmes, and I'm looking forward to getting his perspective on advertising today, how brands can use sound to stand out and be more memorable, and where he thinks things will go in the future. This discussion is gonna be a doozy, so keep listening. As always, if you have questions for my guest, you're welcome to reach out through the links in the show notes. If you have questions for me, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com, where you'll find a lot of ways to get in touch. Plus, subscribing to the newsletter will let you know when the new podcasts are available, along with other interesting bits of audio-related news. And if you're getting some value from listening, the best ways to show your support are to share this podcast with a friend and leave an honest review. Both those things really help, and I'd love to feature your review on future podcasts. You can leave one either in written or in voice format from the podcast main page. I would so appreciate that. And now, here's my conversation with Reed Holmes.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Reed. This is going to be a really interesting conversation, I think.
I think so. I hope so.
How have you been?
I've been good.
I really appreciate you joining me today, and I'm looking forward to having a discussion about how sound is in all of this advertising as well. I know you have a really good background in the advertising world. So to start us off, I want to ask you if you could tell me a story about how sound moved you at an early age.
How early?
As early as you can go. What influenced you into caring about sound?
I think it was... My father was really into old radio shows, and he had them on vinyl recorded from like the 50s and stuff. And he would listen to them sometimes. And in particular, he mentioned the War of the Worlds as a seminal moment in audio, because it was such a, people took it seriously, even though it was just a drama. So he was very influential in that sense, the kind of like drama theater of the mind, as they say, you know, you picture these big, huge Martian creatures that are described, and they're coming down through New Jersey, and I mean the whole country was freaking out. And it was Orson Welles who has the pipes for audio, and yeah, but that was probably the first. And then of course there's other things like the, you know, all the radio shows, the radio dramas, where they would you know, kind of the best example of it today is the Prairie Home Companion, although that's since gone away. But you know, painting pictures with sound, where it's just in your mind, and you're kind of a bit of a fireside chat, where you're not just watching TV, or you know, you're letting this play kind of happen in your own mind and image. So yeah, I think that's probably the origins for me of the power of audio and to paint a visual picture.
Did you have a particular show that you listened to as a kid, or anything that made a particular impression on you?
Well, when I was growing up, I grew up outside Chicago, and there was a DJ there who, and this was in the early days, this is before Howard Stern, that's how old I am, but this DJ was a guy named Steve Dahl, and he always had these fun things where you just, I mean, even sometimes he was so, I don't want to say rude, but, you know, he was just so real that he would be like, okay, we just got these great, you know, I don't know, croissants from the bakery down the street. So we're going to try one, and then I'm going to try the one from the commissary, and you guys are going to tell me which one you think is better from the sound, you know, or something like that. And he would just, okay, this is the, you know, and it was radio, and it was just so silly. But I would lay in bed, you know, it would be my wake up every morning to go to school. As I would, the radio would pop on, and it would be Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer. So it was, that's another thing that kind of cemented the idea of audio as an art form unto itself.
Oh yeah, radio is big that way. And also radio advertising really has to be very creative, because again, it's like an audio drama. You're using your imagination for all of it, and all you're getting is sound. So yeah, a very different type of advertising medium, really, other than television.
For sure.
But what got you into advertising then?
Well, another kind of family situation. So,
this is what had to do with peanut butter,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Okay.
So,
I want to hear that.
I'll tell you the story. So, my mother both my mother and her brother, my uncle, were in advertising in the 60s, 50s. My mother earlier, because she's older than my uncle, was older than my uncle. And, she worked at an ad agency in the Detroit area. And in the 50s and 60s, Detroit was the cosmopolitan place to be. It was booming, auto industry, I mean, everything. And so she worked as a copywriter / hand model, because back in the 50s, there was no recorded commercials. They were always live. And so one of her clients at this ad agency called Simons Michelson in the Detroit area was a peanut butter brand, the name of which I can't remember, but she would have to bring up a case of it down to the TV station, so that every time they did a commercial, she would open a new jar, you know, and stick the knife in there and spread it on the bread and talk about how creamy and buttery it is and how delicious it is. And you can get it at the market down the street. And every time she did one of those live commercials, there was this jar of peanut butter that couldn't be used anymore because it had been opened and it had had a knife stuck in it and all that. And she got wind that there was a guy there at the studio who was the floor manager of the TV studio. So this is someone who is standing behind the cameras on the floor of the studio, kind of directing, telling, he's the one that goes 5, 4, 3, like that. And so whenever the show would go back on, my mom would bring over these peanut butter jars to the person who was the floor manager, who turns out became my dad. So that's how they met.
I love it.
You know, so she kind of had a crush on him, and she would use the peanut butter as an excuse to go talk to him. And
Well, good for her. That's creative.
Yeah. So five kids later, and yeah. So that's how I came into the not well. That's not literally
that's
how
you came into the being, world. But yeah.
But from there, I was going into college. I was talking to, you know, as you do, like, what do? Why, you know? But there was one point in particular that I went, and my family, all seven of us, and my grandmother, who was my uncle's mom, my mom's mom, we went to visit him. He was working on the Chrysler account in the Detroit area. And he had worked all over the world and just happened to be working in Detroit. So it was easy for us to go join them for probably it was like a Thanksgiving or an Easter or something. And we drove up to his house. It had this long driveway in Rochester, Michigan, just, you know, north of Detroit, which happens to be also where Madonna's from. But it was this huge, like, chunk of land with this narrow driveway that went up. And then you get out of the car and there's a pool and there's an outdoor grill and this house is gorgeous. And that's when I first realized, I was like, Mom, what does Uncle Bill do again? And, oh, he works in advertising. He's da, 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 da. Okay. And I kind of parked that away and I thought, well, it's a creative field. I've always liked that. I've always been told I'm a good writer. I can write well. And there's a lot of call for that in the advertising business. And that was the next thing that pushed. I was like, well, my mom was in advertising. My uncle's doing really well in it. I should give it a shot because it seems like it runs in the family and maybe I'd be pretty good at it. Well, then it becomes really hard to get your first job. It's really hard to get your first job in an ad mm-hmm. agency. You have to put a portfolio together. You have to interview, unless you're some kind of rare talent and you hit, you've got the work and the opportunity just happens to be right there in front of you that they'll hire you on the spot. But it generally takes a while. And so that was back for me in the early 90s, where I got my first job at an agency called Ogilvy in Chicago.
That's a pretty big one, right?
Yeah. No, I was very fortunate to get that opportunity.
Are you enjoying this podcast? If so, it would really help me out if you'd give it a review. The best place to do that in written format is at the bottom of the audiobrandingpodcast.com page. And if you want to do that in voice format, there's a link in the ending paragraph at the top of that same page. I would so appreciate that. It helps me to know what you'd like to hear more of and why you're listening in the first place. As podcasters, we rarely know who's actually listening, so it helps me to know that I'm not just speaking into the void. Thanks for that. And now, back to the show.
So what were some of the accounts that you worked on? Is there anything particularly notable that you remember?
Well, I can remember one. I spent my first year, because that's what they do to junior copywriters.
Of course.
Working in what they all thought was this forgotten and unnecessary, or not unnecessary, but overlooked creative medium called radio.
Yes.
And so I spent a year writing Sears radio commercials. And I remember, trying to find creative ways to demonstrate appliances. A friend of mine mentioned one he did where they wanted to demonstrate the Kenmore dishwasher. So they did a thing where it's like, okay, we just baked a big chocolate cake and we're going to put it in the dishwasher and run it through one cycle. And we're betting that the plate comes out clean. And I don't know if he ever sold that or not, but it was such a cool, because you hear the plate and the clinking of stuff, and it was such a drama. Like, you'd see it being put in there and the closing and the washer starting up. And I just thought that was really cool audio kind of a thing. So
kind of a waste of a chocolate cake.
That's another way to look at it.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, well.
I never thought of it that way. You're right. But
It first. That's what you
that's
do.
Right.
You eat
then
it
put
first.
Put the plate in there. Yeah.
Yes.
Actually, it should have been. We have two chocolate cakes. One we're going to eat while we listen to the dishwasher dissolve the other
See,
one.
See, that I could get behind.
Yeah. So, yeah. But that was, you know, my first accounts were like Sears. I worked on Equal Sweetener. Mm-hmm. I worked on Waste Management. Back in the 90s, I worked on Western Publishing, mm-hmm. which is really a lot of games like Pictionary and stuff like that. So that's where I got my start.
And that was all radio, or was it mixed? And
it started as radio because that's, you know, which is a good training ground, quite honestly, for copywriting. Sure. But I eventually did TV commercials for Sears, and another bit of trivia, which is kind of funny. While I was trying to get my first job, I worked as a waiter at a restaurant at a mall. And that mall had three anchor stores. One of them was a Sears. And when after I got my first job, I quit that job. I was working at that restaurant. It was like a Houlihan's or something. And I quit that job. I go to work. And 2 months later, I'm back at that mall in the Sears with a film crew shooting commercials for their for TVs and appliances and all that stuff at their store. So it was a full 360 kind of a thing.
That's nice.
And
though.
I was able to go back.
Step up.
I went back to the restaurant just to see who was there. And there were a few people I knew. And they're like, oh, what are you doing here? And I'm like, well, you know how I left for this job? Well, we're shooting commercials at the Sears right now over there. You should come over and check it out.
Very cool.
Yeah, it was another full. I guess I've had some full circle moments.
That's a good thing. I think all of us should have those in our careers, definitely. And now you have a book, right?
I do.
You've written about appreciated branding. Yes. And it's on the screen for
a little bit there for
those of you who are hearing. So why did you write the book? And what is appreciated branding? Because that's an interesting term, and I think people need to know what it's about.
Well, it's funny because there's a couple of reasons I wrote it. You do this advertising stuff long enough and it starts to become the ephemeral nature of it starts to become kind of like, okay, what's next? You know, and I actually did in one of my keynotes that I do, I have a slide where I literally took a still frame from every commercial I could find in the digital era, because I worked half of my career in the non-digital era and the tape era, and I don't know where those all went, but and it's just a bunch of postage stamps on one, and I was like, is that going to be it? Is that all I've done? Is just that stuff that made a lot of other people a lot of money, and it's all gone. It's all ephemeral. It's all forgotten. I mean, I won some prizes, maybe that's nice, you know, but and so that coincided with my children. I have three children, twins who are 4 years younger than my oldest son, and they all happen to graduate from either college or high school this one May. This was in 2023, I think. Yeah. And God, it's 2025. Jeez.
And
I was looking
flies.
At them and I was like, yeah, I was like, what have I done to make the world any better for these guys? Like, I've basically been in the business of trying to sell people stuff for 30 years. What else can I do? And so I was thinking about the work I'd done, the best work I'd done, work I really admire, advertising work in the world. And I found out that there's an overlap where work that's getting the most notice and the most effectiveness is work that strives to earn a thank you. So it's not just, hey, we got whiter whites. We'll make your clothes whiter whites. And then someone else comes along and says, well, we'll make your clothes three shades whiter. And it's the world has become so saturated with products that are all trying to differentiate themselves in the smallest of little ways that I think it's imperceptible to most people. I was just listening to a podcast, and this woman who wrote this book called The Attention Economy, and she said there are three kinds of attention. One is no attention, and this comprises what would be called 100% of what's possible for attention. So a third of I don't think she mapped it out, but she said one of the three is no attention, one is passive attention, and one is active attention. And the hardest thing to get is active attention. Passive attention is, yes, I see that. I'm watching the soccer game and I see Emirates on the thing. Big deal, right? But the name is, it's there. And she was asked the question, does attention really matter in advertising? And she was just like, turn off your ads for 6 months and ask me again. You know, of course it does. attention, and I say this in my talk, attention is the oxygen of marketing. Because if you don't get attention, you don't get notice, you don't get sales, you know. And so attention is critical, but what's happening is that companies think that just talking about themselves is going to do it, you know. And appreciated branding takes it a step further and says, it's not about you convincing me to care about you. It's about convincing me that you care about me. So if you care about me, what are you doing, even in this moment of trying to get my attention, to help make my life better, to help make my world better, to help me be better in 10 minutes than I was 10 minutes ago? And that is the essence of what appreciated branding is. It's doing things to the immediate benefit of the people you're trying to attract so that they pay more attention and they appreciate you for the efforts you make. And that's how you get to that beyond just passive attention to the real kind of active attention. Another way to think about it is if you care about certain things, you're more likely to pay attention to those things. So one example that I use, and a mentor of mine uses this story, and I've kind of co-opted it, but it's illustrative. So you're a tennis coach, and you offer tennis lessons, and you're killing yourself, paying for billboards everywhere, direct mail, whatever. Tennis lessons, if you need tennis lessons, I'm your guy. I'll teach you the fundamentals. I'll teach you forehand, backhand, all that stuff. And most people are kind of like, oh, yeah, I guess I'd like to take tennis lessons someday. What are you doing to motivate people to want to pay attention to that message? And one of the things this particular coach did is he realized, wow, there's a place where tennis lessons can be really helpful to people. In particular, parents who have kids that are running them wild and running them ragged. And so this guy started marketing himself. Hey, if you've got kids that could use a little tire them out time, tennis lessons are a great solution. You'll get a break. They'll learn a lifelong sport and everybody wins. And when he changed his message to that, he started getting bookings all over the place because he framed it in a way that people could appreciate. Oh, I will thank you for that. You know, now you've solved the problem for me. Now you've figured out something you can do that is additive to my life. He's still teaching tennis lessons. He's just talked about it in a way that people kind of go, oh, I could use that. That's helpful
to
me. Yeah.
Are you looking for ways to improve your company's or podcast's impact? You'd be surprised how powerful the use of an intentional audio branding strategy can be. Want to know more? I have a free downloadable PDF that gives you my 5 tips for implementing an intentional audio strategy at voiceoversandvocals.com/audio-branding-strategy. That location does ask to put you on a mailing list, just to send you updates on when the new podcasts come out. But if you really don't want to give your email out, I understand. Just contact me directly. My email is all over my website, and I'll make sure you get that PDF without needing to sign up anywhere. If you do sign up, though, you also get access to a resources section called The Studio, where I have videos, white papers, and PDFs, discounts from my guests, and snippets of audio from my guests that no one else gets to hear. So maybe it's worth your while. Totally up to you. And of course, if you're looking for voiceovers, you can get in touch with me about that too. Now, back to the podcast.
So how does that work with something, for instance, that you've worked on in the past? What is there a particular brand that you've worked on that you felt you did a campaign like?
Yeah,
that?
I think the example I provide most often is, there's a couple. One of them is a big mass brand, and I believe they're north of the border too, called H&R Block. And it's a tax preparation. Yeah. So I remember doing some, we did some work for them too, because I worked on that account. Mm-hmm. And the origins of this whole story kind of come from something that happened there. So we had pitched in one H&R Block, and we'd pitched on this idea that kind of on the whole rational versus emotional was probably more on the emotional side, which is a pretty big win. Most clients just think so rationally about who they are and what they have to tell people about what they have to sell. And we kind of pitched them this one idea, which I thought was really cool. And it was called, it's when you got H&R Block, you got people. So the whole idea was, you got people to take care of that. It's kind of a Seinfeldian kind of thing. You know, I'm going to have my people take care of my taxes. Sure. I don't have to worry about it. And we pitched that idea. They liked it. They gave us the account. We retained the account with that idea, the agency I was at. And we went out and shot a bunch of commercials and radio commercials, or shoot radio commercials, or recorded, and print, and all the things. And after, in January is when tax season kicks off, right? So these guys spend $140 million in basically a 3.5 month period. Wait, January, February, March, April, 3.5, which is a big spend. And after 2 weeks, I'm trying to shorten this. I'm sorry. After 2 weeks, my account director.
We like a good story.
Okay, my account director comes into my office and he says, "Did you get the email?" And I'm like, "No." And that's usually kind of bad news. It's like, "Oh boy, you know what do we got?" And he said, "Open your emails. I'll just have a seat." So he sits down on my couch and I open the email, and our client had forwarded a note from a customer in, of all places, Dunbar, West Virginia, which is not exactly, you know, Hollywood or, you know, well-to-do area. And in the note, she said, "I was driving up to an H&R Block store. My 8-year-old daughter saw," her name was Jada, I remember in the email, "saw the sign, H&R Block, and said, 'Mom, does this mean we have people?' And the mom said, 'Well, yes, it does, Jada. We do, you know.'" And the feeling that this mom got for being able to tell her daughter that they were somehow enabled to have this resource, to have this, you know, this kind of hire out for help situation, was a huge deal. And so she sent a note saying, "Thank you for this." And that was kind of the origins of appreciated branding, of what I originally called brand gratitude, and then what it changed to thank you branding. And then I ended up with appreciated branding because I could get the URL. But but it is really about appreciation. And if you put that at the center of what you're trying to do, that's essentially what a good product does, is it solves a new problem that hadn't been solved before. And what's happened with brands is they're solving problems that nobody cares can be solved anymore.
Mm.
Like, I don't care if you can get my clothes 3 shades whiter. It's like, it's already going to be white. It's going to be clean. No one's going to go, "Oh, that's 3 shades whiter than that." You know, so solve bigger problems that are adjacent to your product category that you can use your voice to help solve. And as long as we're talking about laundry, the case that I really love that I share the most is about a laundry detergent in India. So in India, there are basically two competing brands. One is called Ariel detergent. One is called Surf detergent. And they, of course, year after year, were spending millions to try and get that whiter whites share, you know, that right of the decimal point share.
Sure, yeah.
And 1 year, Ariel was like, "Did you know that 95% of the people in India still think laundry is a woman's job?" And Ariel was just like, "Gosh, that doesn't seem like it's..." This was 2017 or 18 at the time. They're like, "That doesn't seem right. Like, it's... haven't we all moved past that?" Like... So they created a campaign they called Share the Load. And what they did is they went out there and they advocated hashtag Share the Load with for everybody in the family to help with the laundry. It shouldn't just be mom's job anymore. And of course, this kind of air cover for someone who is burdened with this task would elicit a huge thank you, because that's... you're just helping to make their lives better. And you haven't done a darn thing. It's not about the product.
It's positioning.
Yeah, it's like, here's what we know you care about, and so we're going to prove that we care about you because we care about that. Sales went up 76%.
Wow. That's a pretty big jump.
So I thought, well, gosh, this is something then. You know, this isn't just, you know, purpose marketing or something like that. This is actually driving bottom line results big time. And so I thought, this is kind of the Venn diagram of, you know, what products do, what the emotional problems or things they can help solve, and what will give me the opportunity to kind of take another chapter in my career. And that's kind of, I'm right in the right in the center there. So
I know it takes some effort to write a review, and I know how busy and, let's face it, kind of stressful our lives are right now. So it means a lot that you take the time to let me know how you feel about the podcast. Bruce at Mindfulness Mode writes, "This is a gift to any business. This podcast gives a whole new perspective to branding, and every business owner needs to hear it. Jody has a terrific voice and presence as an interviewer, and she draws out the best from her guests. There are powerful lessons you need to hear right now to pump new life into your business. Thank you so much for your thoughtful words, Bruce. I really appreciate it. And now, back to the show." You also talk about the plateau of indifference as well. So yes. Where does that fit into this?
Well, that is something that is... So when you're in a very crowded category, laundry detergent being one of those things, or, you know, there's lots of them now.
Tax services, I'm sure.
Tax services
is
becoming more and more crowded.
Insurance.
Oh, yeah. And we can talk about the audio cues of insurance advertisers now, because I don't know if you guys get a lot of what we get, like Liberty Mutual down here, but
I've heard a lot of them, and I do notice that a lot of them tend to repeat their name over and over
again.
Yeah,
which is, anyway, we can talk about that. But my, what was I saying earlier?
In the plateau of indifference that we're going to talk about.
So there's a point at which people just don't have the bandwidth to give a hoot anymore. Laundry detergent. Okay, so we're using that example. You stand in the aisle of the laundry detergent aisle at any store, and there are 30 products that solve the same problem. I am indifferent to which one I choose. Usually I'm choosing based on price, because why wouldn't you? If I can solve this problem for a buck cheaper or whatever, I'm going to do that, right? That is the plateau of indifference, when you're basically leaving people to choose only on price. What Ariel did is they said, well, we're actually here to help. Like, so maybe everything, maybe we're the same as Surf. Maybe we're a little better. Who knows? But we're actually giving you air cover to make your life better, to help you in a better way. That's how you get someone off the plateau of indifference. You give them a reason to care. That is more of an emotional, I call it in the book, a unique emotional solution, or a unique appreciable solution that no one else has talked about. And you can then take ownership and use your brand's voice to talk about it and earn that appreciation, which comes back to you in the form of thank you notes, which are dollar bills.
Yeah. And it's very powerful.
This has been part one of our interview. I hope you'll tune in next week for part two. Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.